You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today's topic is Marvel's Phase 3 of its cinematic universe, which we now know about thanks to the very dramatic and somewhat surprising announcements that were made earlier this week. And here to discuss it with me is my go-to guy for such topics and so much more, Midnight Entertainment's own Jim Yelton. Welcome aboard the show yet again, Jim.
Thanks, man. Good to be back.
You've become a regular presence, and the listeners all really seem to enjoy having you on, and I'm thrilled that you were available to talk about this on short notice, because this is one of our sort of, kind of emergency things are happening topical topic subjects. Boy, I just mangled that sentence to death, but you know what I mean, right?
There's breaking news that we need to talk about.
Breaking news. Yes, the Marvel has broken the news and almost broke the internet. So I have no specific outline or pre-planned agenda for this episode. I simply want to sort of discuss with you what Marvel has announced and what our reactions are to it. Now, before we dig into it, tell those who are joining us for the first time and don't know, and I think most of our listeners do, but if we have new listeners, who exactly are you? and what do you do?
Who am I?
Who is this man?
That's a question I ask myself all the time. Who am I? I'm a writer such as yourself. I have loved everything sci-fi genre related. Like you, I'm a child of the 70s and 80s. So I grew up with, Star Trek, Star Wars, all of the superheroes. I'm a big Marvel guy. In fact, I know that you've gotten this criticism from some people as well, that now we're becoming like Marvel homers almost. And, it seems like we're just like, members of the Merry Marvel Marching Society or whatever. And, but I've written science fiction with the Swindlers of Doom. I've got an upcoming superhero series that's going to be starting first of the year called Extraordinary. Kind of gets into, some of the same territory that Marvel gets into. I am a screenwriting instructor as well. So I cover a whole range of stuff. And I have a new podcast that started about 2 months ago called 30 Minutes of Geek, which you were kind enough to be the first guest for.
Yeah, that was awesome. I appreciated you thinking of me.
Yeah, it was really fun. And it's funny because, it, like you said, I'm kind of like your go-to guy for stuff like this. And you were like my go-to guy. Like, I really wanted to talk Marvel Phase 2 to kick off my podcast, because we had not talked about any of the Marvel movies since the Avengers. And so it was really funny when, all this news broke this week and you got in touch with me and said, we need to talk about this. And I was thinking the same thing. I was like, I need to talk to Van about this.
That's awesome. Well, this because there's certainly a lot of cool stuff here to talk about. Like I said, I haven't made any notes or anything. I figure we just dig into it and dig around and we'll see how far and how long it goes.
Sure.
So I think first I'm going to lay out what exactly, for those that haven't heard yet, and if you're interested enough to listen to this podcast, I'm thinking you probably already know, but just to be sure, I'm going to lay out the titles and the dates of what Marvel announced would be coming out movie-wise following this, following the end of Phase 2. Now, for those that don't know how Marvel divides these up, Phase 1, Marvel's Cinematic Universe Phase 1, began with Iron Man, because that was really the first movie that Marvel made entirely themselves. They took out a big loan from Chase Manhattan or some, I think that was who it was, actually, like a couple $1 billion, and they met using the as collateral their, the value of their characters, and they made Iron Man. Of course, it was a big hit, the Jon Favreau movie. Then they made The Incredible Hulk. and Iron Man 2, and then Thor and Captain America, the First Avenger, and Phase 1 ended with the gigantic, gargantuan, money-churning juggernaut that was Marvel's The Avengers. Okay, so Phase 2 began with a sort of dud, but it made a lot of money, so who am I to complain? Iron Man 3. They then went ahead and did the other two major Avengers characters, Thor the Dark World and Captain America the Winter Soldier, which were both spectacular, I thought.
Yes.
And then we got the little starship that could, Guardians of the Galaxy, which people were predicting would be Marvel's first financial failure as opposed to creative failure, which was Iron Man 3. And as a moneymaker, Guardians of the Galaxy has almost caught up to Avengers. Well, it's about halfway to Avengers, but it certainly vastly exceeded anything anybody expected.
I haven't checked the latest totals, but I'm fairly sure Guardians of the Galaxy has exceeded all of the Marvel movies except for anything with Iron Man.
Yeah.
So I never the Avengers and the three Iron Man. It may have eclipsed one of the Iron Man movies.
Yeah, the last I saw it was around 700 or 800 million. Avengers made $1.5 billion, if I recall correctly. So, but yeah, the Iron Man movies are all right up there below Avengers. So I never thought I would say that. I can't believe I live in a world. I cannot believe I live in a world where my favorite character as a kid wasn't even on the toys. You could get toys of Spider-Man, Captain America, Hulk, not the X-Men, but just sort of the mainstream big Marvel characters. But you couldn't get anything Iron Man other than a little Mego action figure, and even it had a nose, which was a deal breaker for me. though to be fair, Iron Man did have a nose there in the early 70s, very briefly. Boy, people don't remember that. And so then we've got, to finish out Phase 2, we have Avengers Age of Ultron coming out next May, and then the much-derided Ant-Man, July 17 of next year. That thus endeth Phase 2, and until last week, anything beyond that was more or less speculation. We figured there'd be there would be some kind of Avengers 3, but we didn't know exactly what shape or form it would take. Clearly they were setting up something with Thanos, since he's not, the featured villain in Avengers 2. After all this setup, you had to think, that was it. But let's, Jim, do you have it in front of you? Tell the folks out there what we are getting for Phase 3.
And this is where it's funny. I said I wanted to have you as the first guest on my podcast so we could talk about Phase 2. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to hit pause on this podcast and go listen to episode 2 of 30 Minutes of Geek, at the third segment that you and I did to close out that episode was speculating about what Phase 3 was going to be beyond Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that we were going to see and what the setup for an Avengers 3 was going to be. And it was so funny because I was patting myself on the back when the announcement was made, because you and I had a minor disagreement.
I can't remember anything about this, so please fill me in.
Right.
Fill us all in.
Well, because it was real brief, and we were talking about that Marvel had announced dates for movies, but they were all to be determined movies. Like, they didn't give us titles or characters. They just said, we're going to release some movies on these scattered dates over the next 4 or 5 years. And I remember saying that the 2019, it's May 3rd, 2019 was the last date of the list. And I said, that's Avengers 3. They're going to lead to May 3rd, 2019 is going to be the holy mother of all team up movies. And they're going to just cram everybody into one movie. So when the announcement was made, I was like, oh, I was half right. we're getting half of an Avengers movie then. Yeah. So yeah, I've got the list in front of me. It's 2016 is going to be Captain America Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be,
we're going to go through and discuss each one of these separately. Yeah. So if you're listening, there's discussion coming, but let's hit the list first. Okay.
Okay. So Captain America Civil War, Doctor Strange, comes out in the fall of 2016, I believe.
Yeah, November 4th.
And then they're going to start, because they've decided it's not good enough that they have two huge blockbuster movies a year. So 2017, they're going to have three. They're going to kick off the summer with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And then we get Thor Ragnarok.
Which nobody out summer. There in the nobody in the media had any understanding of what Ragnarok was. It's so funny.
Exactly.
When that announcement came out, people are like, and we were trying to figure out what this means. It means something about the end of I'm like, it's Armageddon for the Norse gods, you
Yeah,
moron.
Like how hard is it to Wikipedia?
Oh my God. That was hilarious.
And then in the fall of 2017, they're doing Black Panther.
Cool.
And then in 2018, this is when things like ramp up to the 10th degree and get a little weird for me.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it when we get into individual discussion about the movies, but
yes, sir.
2018 kicks off with Avengers Infinity War Part 1.
Thank you, Lord.
Yes. And then we get Captain Marvel.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lord.
Which again, it was one of those things, you know, just kind of like Ragnarok, like nobody knew Captain Marvel. And I was like, sweet Christmas. Just tell me it's going to be Carol Danvers. Tell me it's going to be Carol Danvers. And it is. That's going to be the first solo female helmed movie. And then in the fall of 2018, we get The Inhumans.
Good Lord have mercy.
And it's all leading towards May of 2019 with Avengers Infinity War Part 2.
And then we can all die because we will have seen it all.
Yeah.
At that point, we can go to our reward knowing that we have seen Marvel Phase 1, 2, and 3. All right. I can't stand it. Let's dig into these because I've got a lot to say about all of them, and I have no doubt that you do too. So,
oh yeah,
May 6, 2016, Jim, Captain America Civil War. Where do we begin talking about this one? What is your immediate reaction on seeing it? Oh.
Well,
wait, before that, what did they announce before that?
Right. Well, this is what I thought was funny, because everybody, you know, they had this big event to announce all of this. And, you know, obviously Captain America was leading off the slate.
Right.
And they said, you know, I don't know if you've seen the screenshots of,
I
the
have.
Actual logo. It said Captain America Serpent Society.
That's awesome. Here's the thing. I would have taken that seriously. I mean, I didn't think that's what they would do, but what's wrong with the Serpent Society? It's not like they said, you know, if they really had I guess that was just serious enough that people would fall for the joke. Because if they really wanted to be goofy, they could have said something like Batroc Legion or something.
Because it was I don't remember the exact order because I didn't go back and look at the article, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't until they announced Black Panther that they went back.
Yeah.
And Kevin Feige said, oh, wait, I've had a second thought about the Serpent Society thing.
Right.
How about we do this instead? And that's when they announced Captain America Civil War. And I thought it was really cool. Like, none of the footage is leaked. They've just talked about what happened. But that's when they brought out Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans to talk about Civil War
and fight.
And they fought over Black Panther, too, because that was when they announced who was going to play Black Panther. But I think it was cool because even before this big event where they announced all this, there had been discussion about Robert Downey Jr. was negotiating to be in the Captain America sequel.
Okay.
And so, you know, there was already talk about, well, if Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in Captain America, what's the story going to be? And originally it was just going to be a small part, but he wanted it to be much bigger. And that's when they started having discussions about, well, maybe we can do Civil War bigger than we had planned. If, you know, Downey Jr. All really right. wants to be in the whole movie and not just, you know, kind of a cameo thing.
All right. So two questions. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Two questions come to mind. One, if you're going to do it that way, why name it after the character that has been less financially successful? Why not do it like Superman, Batman, and have Iron Man, Captain America, Civil War?
I thought about that too, because my initial reaction was, if that's what they're going to do, why is it just a Captain America movie?
Yeah.
And I think part of it may be, and again, this is like total speculation because we don't know how they're going to play the story out, but I assume knowing how the comic Civil War played out, that Tony was kind of the bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as they tried to, you know, state the case for him and, you know, make him out to be kind of in a gray area. I mean, he really was kind of the villain of Civil War when it all
he played that out. He played that role. He took that spot in the dramatis personae. Absolutely. Right. Even if you didn't disagree with him as violently as Steve Rogers did, he still played that part. Yes.
And so I wonder if they're not taking a cue from that, and if Tony Stark in this movie is going to be the villain or have the villain role.
Right.
Versus Captain America, who's going to have the more honorable stand on this.
Yeah. Well,
and because the one thing that I think is interesting, and I don't know if this is your second question, but in the comic book Civil War, a lot of it had to do with secret identities and how that played into the Superhuman Registration Act, and that mm-hmm. a majority of the characters that didn't want to sign on did so because they didn't feel like they should have to give up their secret identities just because of, you know, some political maneuvering.
Right.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you don't have that issue. Everybody knows Steve Rogers as Captain America. Everybody's known since the very end of the first Iron Man that Tony Stark's Iron Man. Mm-hmm. So you don't have that dynamic in play. I think it's going to be a little bit more subtle in a way, and they've already started sowing the seeds of some issues between Steve Rogers and Tony Stark from mm-hmm. the very beginning of the Avengers. So that's going to be interesting to see, but I do think that's why it's not Iron Man versus Captain America or vice versa. I think it's still going to firmly be a Captain America movie mm-hmm. with him as the centerpiece hero mm-hmm. kind of combating what Tony's doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, it makes me think about the comics when I was a kid, as opposed to the comics more recently, where they would have guest stars in each other's books, and it didn't have to become a miniseries with a different title, you know, or something like that. Just Iron Man would show up in Captain America, and it would still be Captain America number 218 or something.
And that was something we talked about with the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Was that it seemed like it was a mini Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, where you had Cap and you had Black Widow, and then when they introduced the Falcon, so you did have like other superheroes involved. It was just a Captain America movie. And I kind of feel like that's what they're going to start doing. Like, I think they realize that exactly like you said, they can have all of these characters kind of cross-pollinate into different movies, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the Avengers. Guardians of the Galaxy every time you have a group of characters come together.
Well, I guess what it makes me think, though, is when I think as a fan, especially as a fan who grew up reading those books in the 70s and 80s, mostly the 70s, when I think about that, I think, you know, yeah, let's just call it Captain America. If it has Iron Man in it, awesome. That's just like Iron Man showed up in Neutral Captain America. But when I think about it in terms of trying to market a movie in today's world and I want them to do well, I think, man, I can't believe that they're missing the opportunity to put Iron Man in the title of an Iron Man movie or a movie with Iron Man, you know, other than the Avengers, obviously. So I don't know.
And,
I mean,
and I also think part of it has to do with what DC has going on and what Warner Brothers has going on with those DC properties.
Yeah.
Because Captain America Civil War is going to come out 2 months after Batman. God, I hate that I'm going to say this, Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
So I don't think they wanted to have it be another versus, you know, this character versus this character sort of a title. I think they liked just having Civil War, and I find it hard to believe that with the marketing that Marvel's done successfully for all of these movies, that the average moviegoer is not going to know that Civil War is Captain America versus Iron Man.
Well, when does Superman, Batman, Dawn of Justice of the Justice League of America getting started, but also including Wonder Woman, when does that movie come out?
Well, they remember it was supposed to release the same weekend as Captain America 3. And Warner Brothers blinked and they moved. They actually moved it up. And I think it's the end of March. I think there's 6 weeks in between the two. So Batman Superman.
So it's not coming out. It's not coming out for 2 more years.
Yeah, it comes out in 2016.
Wow. Okay. So for some reason, I've been thinking all along that Superman Batman comes out next year.
Yeah, you would think because of all the hype and the fact that they're almost done shooting it, but
yeah,
they are still a year and a half away.
In fact, a coworker of my wife's is gonna be a bit part in it. Just found out. So they are still filming it. Yeah, I just found that out. It's not official, but they checked everything, and that's pretty much what's filming in the place she's going to be at the time they asked her to be there. So, you know.
Oh, right.
The other thing I wanted to say was Civil War. I mean, you know this has got to be a substantially different version of Civil War than what we saw in the comics. And, you know, Lord, I hope so, because I was not a huge fan of Civil War. I felt that – and I don't want to go into a whole thing on Civil War in the comics, but let me just succinctly hopefully say – the problem, one of the many problems I had, but probably the main overall problem I had with Civil War as a comic story was it was story driven rather than character driven. It was where somebody decided, wouldn't it be cool if this story happened? And then they shoehorned characters whose personalities were different than they needed to be for the story to work into an existing story structure.
Right.
So you had, you know, people behaving very irrationally if they were to be consistent with their previous versions. If Kurt Busiek were to do a sort of Avengers Forever after Civil War, he probably would say that like somebody was mind controlling half of these characters in Civil War to act the way they did, because otherwise they would not rationally have done what they did.
Right.
That's so saying that, I hope that they do substantially alter the story. And I'm imagining it has to be a lot smaller, right? Because they had like every character in the Marvel Universe taking sides, including a lot of the villains in the comic stories. So they've got to substantially alter it, don't they?
Yeah, and that's why – and especially because you're talking about a two-hour movie versus,
right,
you know, however right, long, year-long story arc that they had with the comic book version.
Yeah.
I really think it's going to boil down to Steve Rogers has this viewpoint, mm-hmm, Tony Stark has this viewpoint, and they fight. And – you know, one of them has to stop the other or vice versa. It may flip flop halfway through where, okay, now I have to stop this guy.
But you know what? That almost impinges on the plot of Avengers Age of Ultron, where Iron Man is trying to finish up this work that his father and Henry Pym had done back in the day of creating a kind of a, you know, global or at least an American defense system. And so Tony's taking the position of, the government can do this and that and the other to enforce the law, and you know, you end up with Ultron. And in a Civil War, it almost seems like that's a very similar plot. You kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think that where things end up at the end of Age of Ultron is totally going to lead into Civil War, because you really only have Ant-Man in between,
yeah,
Age of Ultron and Captain America Civil War. So you know the Avengers aren't going to be a part of Ant-Man. And I tend to think that that's kind of the end game of Age of Ultron, that they're going to set up Tony's going down this path.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody else can kind of screw off if they don't like it. And when Captain America Civil War starts, I have a problem with them not picking up on that.
Yeah.
I think that's where Steve is going to have to step up and say, okay, I don't agree with Tony, and I'm not just going to sit back and let him do what he's going to do.
So you can almost see like one of the final scenes of Avengers 2, they're going to defeat Ultron, and then you can almost see Captain America and Iron Man standing there over the ruins of Ultron, and Captain America says, yeah, this was a bad idea from start to finish, and Iron Man saying, well, you know, it wasn't the idea that was bad, just the execution. If we try it again, ..
Exactly.
And, you know, that could lead right into Civil War.
Well, because I think that the progression of Steve Rogers from First Avenger through Winter Soldier has been interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Because he didn't come in – First Avenger was not – and we talked about this, you know, in your podcast and mine, that was not the Steve Rogers in our head from the comic.
Right.
Like it wasn't a fully formed – he's Cap, leader of men.
Yes.
At the end of Winter Soldier – I think he's a step away. Like,
yeah,
he's not quite there, but everything that happened in Winter Soldier made him realize, okay, I'm not just going to be the soldier. I'm not just going to be the taking orders and doing my job guy anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually proactively go out and make the world a better place. And if there are people in my way, then I need to figure out how to deal with that. But I'm not just going to sit back and be the good soldier anymore, because that got me into a situation where we almost lost everything. And so I think when confronted with Age of Ultron, that might push him to the point where he's just like, okay, I have to be the one to step up and be the leader, because there isn't anybody else around to do that anymore. You know, Nick Fury's not here. Tony clearly does not see things correctly. And because I've always felt like with the Avengers and leading into Age of Ultron, that Tony Stark was always like the point guy. He was always kind of like the leader, where everybody else was kind of just around him. And part of that was because of Robert Downey Jr., but also the way that they portrayed Tony in the movies. And I think after Age of Ultron, Captain America's clearly going to be the leader of whatever's left of the Avengers.
That totally tracks and makes sense. Yeah. And I agree that I think that I felt like it wasn't until Winter Soldier that they really started to get Steve Rogers / Captain America right, quote unquote. Yeah. Right. I, you know, he was okay. He was okay previously. He wasn't horrible, but yeah, in Winter Soldier, you really start to see the strong jawed, mostly silent, steely eyed, tough but compassionate leader that Captain America has to be remotely accurate. So, let me see. Oh dear, I just saw something very troubling, which we're about to get to. All right, well, that's Captain America: Civil War, and it promises to be another mini Avengers, which certainly helps Captain America's movies be better than, you know, and more inviting to a bigger audience maybe than they would have been if they're just Cap running around fighting Batroc or something, right?
Easily, yeah.
So that's cool, and that's a very good idea, I think, on Marvel's part. I mean, because Cap is at his best when, like you say, he's a leader of men, when he's leading other heroes. Even if it's not an Avengers movie, if you just have Cap out there with the Falcon or with Black Widow or maybe with the Winter Soldier or whatever, that's just much more appealing than – and also I think it's interesting because since he is a leader, but yet he's kind of – like you say, he's kind of been having to take orders from Nick Fury. And that clearly rubs him the wrong way, because on the one hand, he feels a sense of duty to obey Nick Fury. But on the other hand, if he disagrees – he kind of has to step up and say, no, 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 no. So that was a very interesting part of Winter Soldier to me, was how it sort of turned the tables and put Nick Fury more at the mercy of what Captain America felt was right and decided to do and everything. So
yeah, exactly.
I like that arc, and I'm glad that you mentioned the Captain America arc, the Steve Rogers arc that's been going on across multiple movies. I think that when we look back on all this, when it's all said and done, you know, I think that one of the things that will really stand out, at least if it continues the way it has, is the strength of the Captain America arc through these movies. I think that really is a strong point.
Yeah, it definitely. And it's one of the reasons why I've enjoyed those movies creatively a little bit more than some of the other ones.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot more that they could do to grow that character from the first time we see him until now. And there's still more room for growth.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Let us move on to the next movie in November 4 of 2016. So we get two good ones in 2016. Doctor Strange. Now, the rumor has it that Benedict Cumberbatch will be playing him, but there's been no official announcement yet. And in fact, Kevin Feige said, you know, if we had anything official, we would have announced it.
Right.
So what's your sense of that movie right now?
I think that they're still negotiating with him. I mean, one of the tough things about, and it's weird because I kind of have two minds on this. One of the tough things about them casting some of these characters is you do want to use them in more than just a couple of movies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Marvel plan. And most of these people end up signing contracts for anywhere from 6 to 9 movies. And it's one of the things Chris Evans said before he signed on to play Captain America, that it worried him that he was kind of setting himself up for the next, you know, 9-10 years of his life playing Captain America.
Yeah.
And so I kind of understand from an actor standpoint that you would really want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed and that everything's going to work out long term, because once you sign on, you're going to be this character.
Yeah.
For not just, you know, like with the case of Doctor Strange, it's not just going to be 2 or 3 Doctor Strange movies. He's going to be in the Avengers, and they're going to cross him in. So, yeah. You know, you're looking at tying yourself down for a long period of time. And so I think that's what it is that they're just making sure that not just, you know, contractually and, you know, with financial side of things, but also scheduling and making sure that people have time off to do other things, that, you know, everything kind of lines up. And I have a feeling that, because Benedict Cumberbatch has been really cagey the last couple of months when people ask him about some of these comic book movies. And, you know, he's taken a strict no comment, I can't talk about it. So I think he's got something that's going to come fairly soon. They just don't want to announce it. Marvel's always done that. They've not wanted to announce anything unless it's firm.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, with all the hoops that they've gone through, because originally they wanted Joaquin Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And they've talked to, you know, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 other people to try and find the right person. But I think ultimately Benedict Cumberbatch might be the best fit for the part. And so I really hope that he ends up doing it.
Well, I think there's 3 things that these actors can look at that should make them feel more comfortable. One is the quality of the material. And it's not like they're having to be in brain dead, stupid things over and over.
Right.
Two is that they're making a lot of money. So they're going to be remunerated for it. And 3 is Disney in charge. Surely that's got to be an even more comforting thing for an actor, knowing they're in the hands of Disney as opposed to just doing sort of like equivalent of an indie set of movies, you know?
Right. Well, and I've kind of looked at it because it's funny. I was reading something the other day where they said since he started doing the Iron Man movies, the Marvel movies are, I mean, not only are they head and shoulders more successful than any other movies Robert Downey Jr. has made, mm-hmm. but they were more creatively and critically acclaimed mm-hmm. than some of the smaller stuff he's done. And I was talking to somebody and I said, yeah, but the good thing about doing these kind of movies is it's not like you're constantly doing it. It's not like you're on a TV show.
Right.
So you go make this movie and you spend, you know, whatever, 5, 6, 7 months shooting this movie. And then you've got 2 years that you can go do whatever you want. And yeah. you don't have to worry about somebody saying, oh, that movie sucked or it underperformed or you didn't make any money. I don't care. I'm one of the Avengers. Every couple of years, I'll go do an Avengers movie and make my money. And then I'll go do a string of indie movies that nobody sees. But at least I'm being creatively fulfilled that way.
And doing the indie movies gives you more cred with the movie critics when you then play Iron Man.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would be surprised if Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't end up doing this and they have to go to their 4th or 5th choice because I think he knows that it's a good part and that he's perfect for it.
And now I want to talk a little bit about that in terms of how the cinematic Doctor Strange will work. I mean, in the comics, you know, Marvel's universe is really a sort of a vast multiverse with lots of different, I mean, anything you can think of. Basically, the Marvel universe exists to have a corner of it for anything. Mm-hmm. If you want, you know, alien invaders, there's a corner or 5 for that. If you want Norse gods or Greek gods, they've got corners. If you want Celestials and Galactus, there's a corner for that. If you just want a guy in the alley beating up thugs, there's plenty of corners for that, you know. And so Doctor Strange sort of was the first Marvel thing to carve out the sort of magical, mystical realm where there's like stalactites hanging from the bottom or however stalagmites, whatever, that hang from the bottom of the astral pathways. You know, this is stuff that Starlin later did after Ditko kind of pioneered it, where there's these strange creatures with multiple eyes or no face or whatever that wander around through these strange outer space, yet you can breathe kind of, you know, areas. It's a very weird, trippy, acid-dropping kind of strange realm. And given what we know about Marvel's approach to the cinematic universe, where they'd really try to tie everything more together than that, right? I mean, in the comics, these things can exist completely separately from each other.
Right.
But in the movies, they really have tried so far to tie everything very surprisingly tightly together. You know, where the Asgardian stuff is related to the Celestial stuff, is related to the Infinity Stones. It's all kind of the same currency. And so Doctor Strange, you know, I'm just imagining that Doctor Strange's whole shtick will somehow tie into this same sort of Asgardian, Celestial, Infinity thing. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing is that they waited for Doctor Strange to see if Guardians of the Galaxy was successful. Because that was as far out as they had gone with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, everything else, I mean, say what you want about the Hulk and Iron Man and Thor, but they were able to make it relatable and grounded in some way, shape, or form. And Guardians of the Galaxy was way out there. It was out in the vast reaches of space. And the fact that it was one of the most successful things they've done, I think, emboldened them to say, okay, now we can do the really weird parts of the Marvel Universe.
Hallelujah.
Because everybody bought into Guardians as much as they did. So I don't think it's going to be a huge leap for them to do Doctor Strange. And I agree with you. I think they're going to take the tact of explaining it the same way they explained Asgard and the same way they explained Celestials. And now that they've got some of those concepts out there, it's not that far of a reach to say, okay, there's other dimensions. There are dimensions where magic works and, you know, that's a real thing. And we don't have to explain it. It's magic. It's just, that's the way it is. But it plays into the more cosmic side because of some of the stuff that they've already set up. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing it, just like it didn't surprise me that they waited until the returns on Guardians of the Galaxy came in to announce it.
And you hit on a very important point there. This Marvel Cinematic Universe, and maybe it's because the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man are all, you know, held by Sony and Fox, but what's left is undeniably more closely related to the cosmic side. And we've talked about this in previous podcasts, but it just amazes me that so much of this Marvel Cinematic Universe is cosmic oriented. Right down to having Thanos as the major villain behind the entire Avengers trilogy or quadrilogy or whatever.
I think that's part of the reason, because when they started to put the whole plan together, and this is something that you and I have agreed on from the beginning, that there's been a plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were parts of the plan where they said, okay, if this movie doesn't work, then we can kind of go this direction. But if it does work, then that means that we can go in this other direction, which is way cooler. And I think what happened is they knew Thanos was going to be the biggest villain that they could use. And that had to be kind of the third act villain, which is why they were saving him for Avengers 3. But to get to there, you had to have all of these other steps. You had to have Guardians of the Galaxy. You have to have more stuff going on with Asgard and Thor. You have to have an opening for Doctor Strange to come into play. I mean, all of this stuff has to happen so that you can have Thanos as the big bad at the end of it all. And knowing that your villain for the third act is a cosmic villain,
then
you do have to kind of take those steps to have the more cosmic side of the Marvel Universe in your movies. So I think it's interesting because they've done a really good job up to this point of balancing the two. I mean, we've got really grounded stuff, but we've also kind of got the far out cosmic stuff, and they're going to do even more of that.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot that Captain America Winter Soldier, which is about as street level as Marvel's going to get right now, was every bit as good of a movie as Guardians of the Galaxy, which is about as cosmic as Marvel can really get right now, and that both worked.
Yeah, and what I thought was cool about it, as far as, you know, a release strategy, was those two movies came out in the same year.
Yeah.
It's not like you're saying, okay, well, Captain America was last year and they did Guardians of the Galaxy this year. I mean, they had both sides of the Marvel Universe play out within months of each other at the theater. And that was really cool because, you, like you said, you got the grounded street level Captain America political thriller. Mm-hmm. And then it was almost a complete 180 with Guardians of the Galaxy. And they both worked, and audiences went to both of them, which was really cool.
Yeah, which sort of segues us into Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I don't know how much we want to say about that one beyond just we've already speculated some on the subject matter of it. There's two whole podcasts prior to this one, if you folks want to go back and check, where I had a roundtable on Guardians and did a movie review and some other discussion of Marvel Cosmic. That was you, right?
We did Marvel Cosmic. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like a week later, I did a movie review with a roundtable with several other guests. So it's been pretty thoroughly covered, but, just a couple of months after Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and we can kind of roll it in as we get closer to Avengers 3, part 1 and 2, Thor Ragnarok. Now, again, it was comical to hear people trying to figure out what Ragnarok meant, but Ragnarok is, of course, the death of the gods, Armageddon of the gods. And so, you know, we know we're going to have to get Thor back, hopefully, for Avengers Infinity War 1 and 2, so they can't kill everybody off. So where do you see Thor Ragnarok going in terms of story and what it does to Thor?
Well, the thing that I think is really cool is the idea that at the end of Age of Ultron, we could have the Avengers kind of splintered, because as we talked earlier, I kind of feel that's what they're going to do to set up Civil War.
Yeah.
And you can't have Civil War with all of the Avengers still on Earth. So they have to do something to get Thor back to Asgard, which is obviously going to set up Ragnarok. And then, you know, you've got Tony and Steve fighting each other in Civil War. You've got some of the other minor characters. I kind of wonder what they're going to do with Hulk at the end of Age of Ultron.
But, yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, let's tell the listeners that don't know about Civil War. There's one thing that I failed to mention when we were talking about Civil War, and this is important for all these movies going forward, was that Marvel had to get everybody out of the way that was more powerful than Iron Man so that Iron Man could be the big villain, so to speak, of Civil War. And one of the things they did was send the Hulk off to Planet Hulk, where he fought like a giant, like he was a Conan the Barbarian on a barbarian planet.
Right.
So you also have to get Thor out of the way, because either Hulk or Thor could bring Civil War to a very abrupt ending if they are there.
Yeah, and okay. I just think in order to have the third Avengers movie be as big as it needs to be, they almost have to have all these other characters go off separately for a little while.
Yeah.
Because I've got the impression between Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron – that there were probably some things, adventures that happened off screen.
Yeah.
You know, the Avengers didn't stop being a team completely, especially when Thor came back to Earth in the Dark World. You know, I think they were getting together and doing things. I mean, obviously Black Widow and Cap were working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and doing things together, but the team needs to be splintered. So I think Thor Ragnarok is going to be a very high concept, as guardian centered, you know, big fantasy epic, end of the Asgardian world sort of a thing. Because I think you need to have Thor on the ropes before Infinity War starts.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm interested to see not just story wise what they do with Thor, but where Thor is at the end of that movie.
And I'm curious. I mean, it's like for the first two Thor movies, they played around a lot with the idea of the succession and with, you know, it's like Odin keeps taking one foot off the throne. Oh, I'm leaving. No, I'm not. I'm back.
Right.
Well, I'm leaving. No, I'm back. And so is this finally going to be, I can't remember how we left things in Dark World. I only saw it the once in the theater. I need to get the Blu-ray out and watch it again. But is Odin still around at the end?
Well, that's what's interesting about going into Ragnarok, because at the end of Thor the Dark World, Thor decided he was going to stay on Earth with Jane Foster. And when they cut back to Asgard, you thought that Odin was you know, still in charge and he was still on the throne. But then it turned out that it was Loki in disguise.
Yeah. Okay.
And that he had done away with Odin and he had taken over and, okay. and had everybody fooled into thinking he was Odin. So they've got a really cool story point to pick up from when Thor goes back to Asgard. But I'm interested to see how they're going to play that out. And like you said, is it going to end up with, you know, Thor eventually taking the throne and staying on Asgard?
Mm-hmm. And then only the threat of Thanos can bring him back down to help his friends on Earth.
Exactly.
Black Panther, November the 3rd, 2017. It's amazing that we're looking at movies this far out, and yet it feels like, you know, the time has passed so quickly since 2008 when the first Iron Man. So we'll just keep going and not worry about how long away from here this is. Black Panther. Now, everybody speculated for years that we would get a Black Panther movie in part of this batch, right? Because it was so obvious that, you know, Marvel needs some diversity. The Falcon was great, but this is the even more so the quintessential, I think, black Marvel hero. He's African, not African American. He's Marvel's quintessential black character. He's the king of Wakanda. He's Jack Kirby's awesome, you know, super technical society in the middle of a jungle kingdom, which is fantastic, and so Kirby. We get what's the actor's name? Do you have in front of you the actor's name that's playing him?
Yeah, it's Chadwick Boseman, who played Jackie Robinson in 42, which was just out not too long ago. And James Brown. he just played James Brown. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not bad. That's not bad credentials to be bringing in to play T'Challa.
I think he's going to be able to play the part. And the thing I think is interesting is they, at least the comments that I read from Kevin Feige about it, they're probably starting it off with him not being king and that his father's still king. And so they're going to have all that intrigue and, you know, him becoming the Black Panther. So it's going to be really cool. And I actually think, if I'm not mistaken, they did say that he is going to make his first appearance in Civil War before the actual Black Panther movie. So see, that'll be cool.
It's too bad he can't be involved in Age of Ultron, because Black Panther had some important parts to play in the Ultron saga over the years. You know, he was the one that broke in and the Grim Reaper was after him and the Vision and all that. So,
Van, I don't know if you're aware, but when the trailer for Age of Ultron leaked last week, before they officially released it, it received like 50 million views on YouTube
in 5 minutes
in a week.
Yeah.
I watched it 25 million times.
Yeah. You're half of that thing. You're half of that.
I've looked at that more than the Zapruder film. And there's it's a very short clip. I don't know if you caught this
I know what you're going to say?
Andy Serkis.
Smeagol? Yes.
Is in it.
Oh, I know who he's playing.
And yeah, you and I, as soon as I saw it, I was like, that can't be. It looks like he's Ulysses Claw.
Oh, Lord, please, Claw. I love Claw
so
much.
And the reason why that works for people who don't know the significance of Claw.
And how dare you, by the way. But
yeah, how do you not know? It works in Avengers Age of Ultron because apparently that's where they're going to introduce Wakanda. And that's how they're going to explain Ultron being indestructible, because he starts off by piecing himself together from bits and pieces of various leftover Iron Man pieces. But I guess he's going to go to Wakanda to receive vibranium coating to make himself indestructible, because they can't use adamantium.
See, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, which
adamantium was invented for Ultron and for Avengers side of the Marvel Universe. Later, that follow along Wolverine gets it, but that was. But I know all the audience out there thinks that adamantium exists only for Wolverine.
Only for Wolverine.
Oh my gosh!
But in the movie universe, they've established Cap's shield is made of vibranium, and so if Ultron coats himself in vibranium, he will then be indestructible. And they're saying that that's why Andy Serkis could be playing Ulysses Claw, because he'll be in the Wakanda scenes helping Ultron,
right,
setting him up as the villain in Black Panther, which would be awesome.
Beautiful. And way better than the man ape in so many ways. Yes. Yeah, you know what? I tell you what. If we're going to see Captain America's shield get shattered at some point, they haven't made any secret of that image, then I guess saying it's vibranium, and if we got to defeat Ultron by blowing him up some way, other than the ways that have been done where he stays intact in the comics because he's freaking adamantium, then I guess that works for me more, because I could see something made out of vibranium eventually shattering. But if he's made out of adamantium, it ain't breaking. It's just not happening. So that works for me if he's not completely indestructible, if he doesn't have that absolutely completely indestructible self.
But the cool thing about the Andy Serkis rumor of him possibly playing Ulysses Klaue in Age of Ultron is this shows how brilliant Marvel is at playing the long game.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You know, they're setting up a character in 2015
yeah,
to be the prime villain of a movie that's not coming out until 2017. And it boggles my mind that they're getting that good at seeding these things.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I also kind of wonder how much of the Christopher Priest Black Panther where he has an entourage of beautiful women and everything, where they really play up the royalty versus just being a kind of he's very humble but proud, you know, hero as the Black Panther. And I'm also curious to see what kind of powers he has, if they keep him kind of street level or if he uses high tech or whatever. So should be a very interesting movie, and I'm curious to see how that plays out. The next year, 2018, we get the first installment in the tradition of Harry Potter, you know, the finale part one and part two, and Twilight's finale part one and part two, among others. And now I think if they did Lord of the Rings over again, we'd have had Return of the King part one and Return of the King part two.
Part two, yeah.
Each about 2.5 hours long, which would have been fine with me. But anyway, Avengers Infinity War. Now I got to say, I mean, I guess Infinity War makes sense. When I read Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War, those were the comics that got me back into comics reading for the first time in a long time. I quit reading comics about 1982. All of my foundation of comics reading was between about 1976 and 1982. I didn't get back in until 1992 when I happened to go into a comic book store in Georgetown when I was in graduate school and saw Infinity War and I saw Jim Starlin and I saw Thanos and all those characters and I went, oh, I got to get this. And then I went back and read Infinity Gauntlet I just thought that was a really fantastic storyline. But did you ever think you'd see a movie of it?
No, because it didn't, as much as it was great. And I think we covered this in the episode where we talked about the cosmic side of the Marvel Comics universe. The Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War, as much as it was kind of a Marvel Comics universe spanning story, it really concentrated on a handful of characters that weren't the Avengers, weren't the X-Men, weren't Spider-Man.
Right.
So when I knew they were using Thanos as kind of the big bad that they were leading to for the Avengers, I thought, well, that's interesting because they're not going to have any of the characters from the Infinity Gauntlet fighting him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little did I know they were going to do Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, we still don't have Warlock though. I mean, that's the thing is, and I don't guess movie viewers will ever know this, but the primary opponent of Thanos on and off is Warlock, whether it be as Warlock, Adam Warlock, or as the Magus. And so, I mean, I just am wondering how you do Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War without Adam Warlock.
Well, and that's why I'm wondering, and we kind of talked about this about Guardians of the Galaxy, is Adam Warlock going to be a part of Guardians of the Galaxy 2? And do they set him up to be a part of Infinity War?
Huh.
I mean, I just think that there's a possibility that,
yeah, it's possible.
Some of the setup for Infinity War is going to happen in that Guardians of the Galaxy sequel.
Yeah, I think you're right. But it does beg the question. I mean, at some point you get too many characters and you start to audience.
And that's why, since we're talking about Infinity War Part 1, I think that's why they decided to split it. because they like the idea of having it be the Avengers. You know, you can't have the Infinity War play out in an Iron Man movie or,
right,
you know, Doctor Strange 2. Like, they want it to be the biggest movie that they've done. So they want that to be Avengers. But I think you're going to see in the first part scattering of some of these other characters that have been outside of the Avengers movies. So I think you could see some of the Guardians of the Galaxy in the first one to set up the end game of part two. Because I think part of the reason they split it up is they're getting to the point where between Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, these guys have all started to reach the end of their contracts. And it's something we talked about earlier where, you know, these guys originally signed to do like 6, 7, 8 movies. And when they get to Avengers Infinity War, that's going to be the last movie that they have on contract.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to see all of the Avengers in Infinity War Part 1.
Okay. Okay.
And that's why I think it's going to be interesting to see where Captain America's at the end of Civil War and where Thor's at the end of Ragnarok. Because I don't know that either one of them will be in an Infinity War Part 1.
Well, and then you introduce Ms. Marvel right after Avengers Part 1.
Yeah.
So she can kind of jump into Part 2, maybe, depending on what they do. Well, you know, think about this, too. Doctor Strange could end up playing sort of the Adam Warlock role because you introduce him right before Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Right.
And then he doesn't have another movie on the schedule that goes out 3 more years. So maybe instead of having Doctor Strange 2 in 2019, Doctor Strange is an important character in the Avengers in 2019.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what's going to happen is that Infinity War Part 1 is going to be some of these characters who have been considered newer or secondary characters. You're not going to see Captain America. You're not going to see Thor. You know, they'll probably pony up a ton of money for Robert Downey Jr. And then it's going to be Doctor Strange and Black Panther. And, you know, they'll set up Carol Danvers so that, you know, she can have her movie, which comes out 2 or 3 months after Avengers Infinity War.
Almost exactly 2 months right after it. I mean,
Which is
surprising to me, by the way, that they're going to have another Marvel movie just 2 months after an Avengers hit. Wouldn't you want to just kind of keep that slate open for the Avengers to keep rolling in cash?
Yeah, and that's what I think is weird about them going to 3 movies a year.
Yeah.
Starting in 2017.
They start cannibalizing each other.
Yeah, they really – and see, that's not even – you know, we haven't even touched on all of the movies that Warner's got coming out with the DC heroes. And, I mean, they're going to be overlapping so much that it's almost – they're going to start eating each other audience-wise. But I think that Infinity War Part 1 is going to be much like the recent Hobbit movies. Where, you know, you mentioned earlier the Lord of the Rings movies, and I think they did a great job of fitting all of that story into 3 movies. The Hobbit, on the other hand, had 1 movie's worth of story that they stretched out to 3.
Right.
And the first Hobbit movie felt like it was so much of just a prelude to what was actually supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And it felt like there was just a lot of talking and not a lot going on. It was all set up for the other 2 movies. And I feel like Infinity War Part 1 might be one big long setup for Part 2. And it's going to be a lot of getting all of the players in place, letting you know who's on each side, maybe one big battle at the end where the B team can't get it done and Thanos is, you know, going to take over the universe to set up the fact that we need Captain America and Thor and Iron Man to come back.
Do you think that we'll have the whole love of the personification of death thing for Thanos, or will he just be a megalomaniac trying to take over or something?
I hope so. And I didn't think about it until just this morning, knowing we were going to talk about it.
Yeah.
If there's a part that Angelina Jolie could play.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. You nailed it. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. And it didn't occur to me, like I said, until this morning. And I thought, if they did death, how would they do it? And I thought, ooh, yep, that's it.
That is absolutely 100% dead on, no pun intended, dead on. That, yes, that would be perfect. I can't think
of it. And it's one of those things where if they do it right and they do it the way the comics did it, it's a really key part of the whole story, but she only has to do the one movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have to pay her $40 million to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be perfect.
Well, let's roll on ahead. We've got three more to go. Captain Marvel is the name of the movie, which is basically a Ms. Marvel movie. Now, let me state my position clearly here. She was Ms. Marvel from the early 70s until about 2012, and she's Captain Marvel now. If that's if that represents a with Binary and Warbird thrown in, if that represents a promotion, then I'm all for it. But she's still the character Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, whatever, no matter what you're calling her. And so I'm going to be calling this the Ms. Marvel movie. I know it's called Captain Marvel. That's fine. But it's not about the Kree Mar-Vell. It's about Carol Danvers' Ms. Marvel. So July 6th, 2018, we get a Ms. Marvel movie. I am more excited in some ways about this than anything else because this continues what I've mentioned before, this streak. Marvel is cranking out billion-dollar movies out of properties that could not keep, they could not sustain a monthly or bi-monthly 30-cent comic book.
Right.
I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy got canceled. Ms. Marvel repeatedly got canceled. Even X-Men got canceled. And yet, they're going to crank out a billion-dollar, well, probably $500 million Ms. Marvel movie. I can't fathom this. It's awesome. It's fantastic. But it doesn't compute. It just blows my mind.
Well, and this, much like Doctor Strange, where every time they would bring up Doctor Strange, the one argument you have to have with people is, well, who would be the perfect Doctor Strange? And I've just gotten to the point where I say Marvel has not made a bad decision casting wise with any of these parts.
No.
So I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to find somebody to play this part. But
yeah,
for the life of me, I don't know who the perfect Carol Danvers is.
Yeah. We've had these conversations for years on the Avengers mailing list. So let me, I'll say this. If it was up to me and I was writing a Ms. Marvel movie, despite Deathbird of the Shi'ar kind of being her arch enemy, at least for a while in the comics, I would probably go with Moonstone, the Thunderbolts member slash villain lady.
Yeah.
Cause they're similar. They're both strong, you know, tough women, but with different mindsets. One becomes a hero, one becomes a villain, and a really conniving villain too. But given the movies, you almost might want to take Karen Gillian's Nebula and make her the Ms. Marvel villain. What do you think?
Is she still alive?
Did they kill her?
Did they kill her off in Guardians of the Galaxy? I don't remember.
I don't remember either. But
they could bring her back.
Yeah, I mean, she just seems like she'd be a very good Ms. Marvel villain because you'd kind of want it to be a. You need to have at least one major villain for Ms. Marvel be a woman. You don't want to be all men. And she's already been established. She has connections to Thanos, and she's tough. And she's, you know, I mean, that just seems like, you know, if they had me, gave me carte blanche to write a Ms. Marvel movie, I would do Moonstone. But if you told me I had to do one in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as it currently exists, I think I would go with Nebula.
Well, and this gets into a conversation that I have with people all the time about when they announce a bunch of these movies. And I had the same problem when Warner Brothers announced their slate of DC movies. It's great to say we're going to make a movie based on this character, but does the character have enough to pull off a movie series of their own? Mm-hmm. Do they have enough villains? Do they have one villain that makes it worthwhile to watch them fight in a movie?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the things I worry about with some of these is how I know the character is a great character, but do they have enough surrounding them to hang an entire movie on? And that's why I love the fact that they're doing a Carol Danvers movie, and that blows my mind that we can sit here and talk about it.
Yeah.
But we said the same thing about Ant-Man, and we said the same thing about Guardians of the Galaxy. And I know they made Guardians of the Galaxy work, and I think they're going to make Ant-Man work. I'm just interested to see what they do with Captain Marvel.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly on pins and needles and can't wait, because I've said before, you know, Ms. Marvel is my third favorite comic character, and we've already got number one Iron Man all over the place, and number two Mar-Vell ain't walking through that door. So that pretty much leaves Carol. So I'm as excited as I could possibly be.
Well, okay, now when you say that, though, don't you think they're going to have to use Mar-Vell in some way?
You know, I just don't know. I don't know.
That's why I kind of wonder, and I kind of go back and forth on this, because there's a part of me that wonders if they don't introduce him in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, have him be a part of Infinity War Part 1, and it ends with him dying.
Yeah, and giving the power to Carol or whatever.
Yeah, because that was the first thing I thought when I saw the slate and saw that Captain Marvel was coming out, you know, a couple of months after Infinity War Part 1, I thought, well, that might be the way that they do it.
Yeah, you're right. And it gives you the death of Captain Marvel, too. So there you go.
Right, and that's what I thought, because if you talk about some of the biggest stories in the history of Marvel Comics, that's one of them. And I thought, what a great way, because they could get somebody really good to play Mar-Vell. He'd only be in a couple of movies, and then they kill him off. And to have him be kind of the guy that they hang their hat on and say, okay, if there's anybody that can stop Thanos, it's this guy. And they have a big battle, and he ends up dying.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then all hope is lost. It's like, okay, now what are we going to do?
Well, think about part one of the two-part great Thanos story in Avengers Annual number 7 and Marvel 2-1 Annual number 2. It ended with Warlock getting killed.
Right.
And then he comes back at the end. But yeah, so I mean, there is some nice symmetry to previous stories if you kind of do it that way. I agree. I think we're kind of onto something. I'll tell you this. If it's not how they do it, they ought to do it this way.
They ought to do it. Yeah, right.
We're figuring this stuff out for them. Yeah.
Right. I just told somebody that the other day. I said, you know what? I'm available.
Yeah.
I work cheap.
I know.
Yeah. I could plot all of these out for them, and then they could just go back and make the movies.
You know that what we need is, what they need is, the country, the world needs, is to see a series of movies that says screenwriters Plexico and Yelton, or Yelton and Plexico. That's what
one
the world
days.
Needs right there.
One of these
absolutely
days, yeah.
That would rock. And I don't mean for us. I mean for the audience.
Oh, for the audience. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, we got two more to go. November the 2nd, 2018, Marvel says, we don't have control of the mutants anymore because we foolishly sold that for $5 and a pack of gum to Fox. No problem, because we'll just roll out a canister of Terrigen Mist and give you the Inhumans. And so Marvel rolls out the Inhumans, which are kind of like pseudo eternal Kree-related mutants, kind of funny if you turn your head sideways and look at them funny. So the Inhumans, I mean, this is a property that goes way back in Marvel history, back into the 60s. Yep. This is a group of characters that the average public doesn't know much of anything about, has no clue who they are. But it does give you a whole new sort of quote-unquote superhero team to throw around with brand new characters with brand new powers. And they have some interesting powers. So what's your first take on an Inhumans movie?
I think you hit it right on the head. This was Marvel's way of being able to do mutants mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form mm-hmm. and not call them mutants. I thought it was funny when the teaser scene setting up Age of Ultron played out in Winter Soldier, when they showed Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah.
And they have Baron von Strucker say, you know, the age of miracles is upon us, or whatever he says. You know,
yeah, right.
I thought, well, that's clearly Marvel's way of saying that they're mutants.
Yeah.
You know, we can't call them mutants, but they're miracles, or whatever we're going to call them. And I think that's going to tie in a little bit with the Inhumans, in a way that they're setting up this possibility that people are just born with powers, that they don't have technology thrust upon them, that they're not aliens.
Right.
They're not
gods.
They're not products of scientific experiments, that they're just born that way. Their genetic structure gives them powers. It sounds very similar to mutants. And I think that's what they're going to do. It's weird in a way because I think it does. The Inhumans takes it in another direction of a weird corner of the Marvel universe that's mm-hmm. not very grounded. Mm-hmm. And I've said this a couple of times along the way of Marvel's plan, but I feel like if there's a stumbling block coming up, the Inhumans might be it. You know, the Inhumans might be where they push the envelope a little too far. And they almost have to do it the right way. There's too many moving pieces and there's too many weird characters that they have to set up in that movie. Well, and so I'm interested to see how they play that out.
Let's drill down just a little bit on that real quickly. There's two ways you do the Inhumans. Now, one way is the way they did Thor, which is just say, screw it. Let's embrace all the alternate universe kind of wacky weirdness and have them be royalty living in Attilan with their costumes and all that. If they go that way, that's fine. I'm thrilled with that because that's the classic way the Inhumans are. But you could also do them kind of the way they did the first X-Men movie from Fox, where you have Black Bolt, instead of being in a superhero costume, living in Attilan and be the king of Attilan or whatever, instead Black Bolt could just be a guy in a black leather jacket that can't talk but has some kind of power, and he's gathering quote-unquote Inhumans, mutant-type people
right.
around him, like in Los Angeles or something. And
yeah.
you know, Medusa kind of gets in with him, and they're a couple, and they sort of attract people to them, and you get the royal family of Attilan is actually just like a group of quote-unquote mutants who just kind of gather around as their surrogate family. You see what I'm saying? You could go that way with it and make it more grounded and more realistic looking, at least.
And I think that might be what they do. It would be a good way to embrace both sides of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. To still have the cosmic side of it, because they can clearly explain the Celestials
right.
came to Earth and did some genetic tinkering, and there are certain people on Earth that just have that Inhuman gene in them that once they're exposed to Terrigen Mist or whatever explanation they want to have, then their powers activate and they become superhuman. And I'm interested to see if they try and do that with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver
right.
to set up the Inhumans later on down the road.
That's right. That's good.
But I think you're right. I think that would be a good way to do it, is to still keep it grounded. They're still on Earth, but they're kind of hidden in the shadows.
Yeah.
Especially because some of those mutations
are pretty weird.
That some of the characters have are fairly weird and would stand out.
Yeah. If you get to the core of the Inhuman story, it's sibling rivalry, right? It's Maximus versus Black Bolt.
Yep.
And so you could get that. You could have those two brothers, and you could almost make them like a Charles Xavier versus Magneto kind of thing going on if you did it right. I mean, you could make it different enough that it's not the same story over again. But if you're making the Inhumans the X-Men, then you really have Maximus in the Magneto role, or the Loki role, or whatever you want to say, you know. And so I just think there's some interesting things they could do with that without making it full gonzo, you know, royal superheroes living in a royal floating city in the Andes or the Himalayas or whatever. But
now, right. you know, the funny thing about you saying that, and I know we want to touch on the last movie real quick, but as much as they've made a big deal about Marvel Studios and Disney having a problem with Fox.
Yeah.
And the battles that they've had back and forth, and, you know, Fox is trying to use some of the characters that are quote unquote X-Men characters that also fit into the Marvel quote unquote universe, you know, like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. But it would be like a tremendous middle finger to Fox if they were to pull off the Inhumans being the Marvel Cinematic Universe equivalent of mutants. And they went down that path like you suggested, because then it would basically just be Marvel saying, screw you guys, we don't even need the X-Men anymore.
Yeah, we have our
own. Like, I don't even want mutants. We've set up a way to have our own. We don't need you guys. Have fun with the X-Men.
It's going to be really fascinating to see how this plays out, especially when you consider that Marvel seems to be getting along better with Sony and negotiating about having Spider-Man appear in some of the Marvel movies. where they really don't seem to be getting along with Fox well at all. So I think they really wanted the Fantastic Four back, and I think they thought that with the power and the clout and the money and the Disney on their side, they could get the Fantastic Four back. And Fox is like, no, you can't. And I think this is really getting under Marvel's skin a little bit. So it wouldn't surprise me anything Marvel did to kind of stick it to Fox right now.
Yeah, especially knowing that the Inhumans is going to come out at the tail end of Phase 3. So obviously you're going to have a lot of those characters that you can use beyond Phase 3.
Right. Oh, where, yeah.
You know, because that's one of the things I keep thinking is, you know, Captain America is going to be winding down. Thor is going to be winding down. They're not going to be doing a lot with Iron Man. So they're going to have all of these newer characters that they're going to want to play with for a while. And Inhumans, I think, is going to set the stage for a lot of those characters that could spin off into Phase 4.
Well, and just, let's see, November, so like 6 months after we get Inhumans and a year after we get Avengers Infinity War Part 1, we get the last of Phase 3, which is Avengers Infinity War Part 2. Now, we've touched on this a good bit already, and your idea was that Part 1 would have somewhat lesser characters and just kind of build everything up. And then I take it to mean that in Part 2, we should have the big reunion of everybody. Would that even include the Inhumans?
I think it's going to be everybody that they can get into it.
Good heavens. Good heavens.
I know. And, you know, because we're concentrating more on the movies, you know, we haven't talked about
the TV stuff,
what they're doing with the TV stuff.
Oh, Lord.
You know, that they've got Daredevil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist, and that they've got that Netflix deal. Plus, they've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know that we're going to see those characters, but I think we're going to see all of the film characters in Infinity War Part 2. Even if it's just a brief cameo, you know, there's a massive battle at the end, and they show the Guardians of the Galaxy in their ship as part of the battle. Or, you know, they're on a street somewhere fighting Thanos' forces. I mean, well,
there's always that great scene of Spider-Man and Daredevil, you know, looking at the Avengers flying off to fight Thanos and saying, well, I'm glad we got those guys for that kind of stuff. Now let's go beat up some muggers, you know?
Right. Well, and that's why I think in Infinity War Part 1, it makes sense for them to have some of the lesser characters, especially if they do what they should do, which is figure out a way to get rid of Cap, Thor, and Hulk, and make it all Tony, you know, having to be Iron Man and gather what forces he can.
Kind of a League of Substitute Avengers.
Yeah, because he's, you know, Tony Stark's pissed off everybody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, has to make do with what he can. And then, you know, those guys kind of get it handed to them by Thanos so that you have to call in everybody.
Yeah.
And Infinity War 2 is probably going to be the Avengers becoming whole again.
Well, once they defeat Thanos, and I don't know how you defeat Thanos in the movies, but I guess they'll find a way. At the end of that movie, and everybody goes back, there's two things I'd love to see at the end of Avengers Infinity War Part 2. One is Gyrick coming in and saying, too many Avengers, a bunch of you have to leave, which would be hilarious. And two, in the post-credit scene, I want two post-credit scenes. One is that. They're all sitting around, like, having the shawarma again, and he comes in and says, you know, most of you have to go, seven can stay. And then the second post-credit scene is I want all the dust is settled, and then we see, like, a reflection in a monitor that's watching the final battle, the aftermath, and you see a blue face in a purple helmet and say, you know, oh, they've defeated the menace from space, but now they must face the menace from time. Ha, 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 ha. And it's Kang.
Yes.
That's what I would love to see, but I don't know if we'll ever get a Kang movie. So he's time traveling Dr. Doom. And I'm just not sure that works for Marvel. You know?
Well, and that's what's weird is that, you know, as excited as everybody is, and it's weird to say what comes after that, because we're talking about something that's, you know, 4.5 years from now.
Yeah.
But it's only 4.5 years from now.
Yeah.
We've just spent an hour talking about what, 9 movies that are going to come out in the next 4.5 years. Uh-huh. But it makes me think, okay, this is what they've been leading to since Iron Man.
Oh gosh. Well, and officially or unofficially, they don't. I think they've made a lot of steps. They've gone along.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't think that they've had every single plot point figured out, but I think they knew they wanted to lead to a big, massive. Everybody's in a fight against Thanos. The cosmic characters, the Earth characters, the other dimensional characters, everybody has to come together to do this one thing. Once they get there, I kind of wonder, okay, what's left?
Yeah.
I mean, once you defeat Thanos, how do you go bigger for an Avengers 4? Or do you? Or you just say, okay, this is the end, and we're going to go do stuff with these newer characters.
Well, looking forward and phase four, I like what Feige said, which is we can't say anything about phase four. Apparently, Marvel has storylines planned out through 2028, God help us.
Yeah.
2028. Yeah. But he said that very correctly that speculating about them would reveal spoilers for phase three. So
exactly.
That's fine. So don't talk about phase four. The first rule of phase four is don't talk about phase four. but we know that there's that it's being talked about behind the closed doors of Marvel, and so you know that it makes me glad to know that someday I will die and there will still be Marvel movies coming out even as that's happening. So may not see them all.
And I don't put it past them to do anything at this point because no. You know, as we've talked about these movies and even conversations we've had about the movies previously, I've seen things on a movie screen that I would have bet money I would never have seen in my entire life.
Absolutely.
And it freaks me out that every time they make an announcement, I'm like, wow, I never thought I would see that.
And it's all because of CGI. Without CGI, we wouldn't be getting any of this. It's being able to depict fantastical things on the screen in a realistic way, realistic quote-unquote way. That makes the difference between Nicholas Hammond in his long underwear jumping in a Ford and driving across town as Spider-Man versus what we're seeing nowadays, right? I mean, that's made all the difference. Any final thoughts as we are rapidly running out of time?
No, just as excited as I am about these movies, I keep having to tell everybody every time they make these announcements, because like we talked about with Batman v Superman is like 2 years away. Mm-hmm. And you know, Captain America Civil War is 2 years away. There's still an Age of Ultron movie.
Oh, yeah.
That I watch the trailer for every couple of days just to remind myself that I have that to look forward to.
don't die yet, Hart. Keep beating.
And that's why I felt bad because I know I messaged you the other day about doing a show on Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like if I don't start putting plans in place now, then I won't be able to do that. And I really want to be able to sit down the day after Age of Ultron and talk about Avengers with people.
Yeah. Yeah. I take your vitamins, do your sit-ups, do whatever you got to do to stay alive to see these movies, because we are in for quite a ride the next few years, and it's going to be a fun, fun time. Be sure to check out Jim's great work. Go over to, I believe, at www.midnight-entertainment.com.
Correct.
That's correct. If you are interested in the Avengers and Marvel stuff in general, I edited and helped to write two books on these very topics a couple of years ago. They are in paperback and on Kindle. They are called Assembled and Assembled 2, Your Guide to Earth's Mightiest Heroes, something of that nature. They've been bestsellers on Kindle for a couple of years now, so run out and check those out. And of course, if you like the superhero teams as much as we do, my own team is the Sentinels from White Rocket Books, originally from Swarm Press. This is my sort of homage to the 70s, 80s sort of Bronze Age superheroes. They're a series of novels, beginning with When Strikes the Warlord. So the Sentinels, When Strikes the Warlord, illustrated by Chris Kohler. So please go and check those out. And among other things, Jim, I think we've exhaustively covered these movies, but I think we could talk for another 2 hours about them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things. I was at dinner last night, and I heard two guys at the table next to me talking about these movies. So it just blows my mind that they've become that big.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right. Well, our time is up. It's time for the rocket to get on out of here for another episode. Jim, I really appreciate you coming on at very short notice to talk about this topic. We'll have this episode up in the next day or so. Again, go check out Jim's stuff and his website and mine at whiterocketbooks.com. The rocket's going to get out of here, and we will see you all down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.